Today's show is brought to you by Apica System and Neotis. Neotis develops NeoLoad, the fastest and most automated load testing tool on the market. Design and maintain load tests 10 times faster than with any other tool, so performance testing fits smoothly in Agile and DevOps. Learn more at Neotis, NEOTYS.com. Also, Apica System. Companies such as HBO, Activision, and Salesforce trust Apica with their high-scale load testing and synthetic monitoring. If you can build it, Apica can test and monitor it. For more information on Apica's offerings, visit their website at www.apicasystem.com. That's APICA system.com.
Hi, everybody. It's your old friend Satan here again. You know, it's such an honor to be introducing my favorite podcast on all the hot, new, high-tech innovations in worldwide evil doing. Seriously, whether it's websites crashing, screwed up load balancers, or messed up routing topologies, you know James will cover it all on the next edition of The News of the Damned.
Can you dig it?
Did I hear the big guy?
No. That was just it's a morning show. I get up in the morning and my voice is a little.
Oh well, you know it is Sunday. He might be scared of this day.
Singing in the shower. No, that well, you know, it depends. Back in the day, it was always on a Saturday. You know, Sunday.
Good point. And for some religions, it's on a Friday.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. You know, it's fine. No, normally I like to sing the baritone songs in the shower early. If it's early. I mean, it's noon here, but it's a weekend. I sleep in.
Yeah. So everybody, welcome back to News of the Damned for Sunday, June 4th, 2017. It's been a while since we had an opportunity to chat. You know, you can blame me. I've been on the road and, it's hard to hold that microphone as I'm driving down the highway.
I think you could do it though. You get a headset as you're driving. You
could do it. I could. That could be kind of interesting. Yeah. I'm not sure I'd have a good stable internet connection, but yeah, we could try it sometime.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think we've ever done a show on a Sunday.
Not even we've recorded on a Sunday night, but I don't think we've ever done a live show on a Sunday.
That's true. We have done lots of recordings on Sunday nights, but first time a live show.
Yeah, maybe we need a new theme for Sunday morning. You know, like the CBS Sunday morning. You know, the big trumpets blaring. You know, the sun.
It's kind of angelic. That's sort of cathedral esque set. That you know, like the Sunday morning evangelicals get on the TV programs there.
Yeah,
maybe we need to do it whenever it becomes a regular thing.
Before I forget, we do need to acknowledge something from GT Metrics. We acknowledge your communication and endeavor to present your tool in the best possible light, even though you are Canadian and have bacon issues.
Yeah.
So thank you for the note. Yeah. So for those of you who don't know who we are, we're two wild and crazy guys. This is Mark Tomlinson, my colleague on the other end of the virtual internet. Say hi, Mark.
Hi, Mark.
Yeah, exactly. He's just that type of guy. And my name is James Pulley. We are, you know, two wild and crazy guys on the Perf Byte side. And this is News of the Damned. So let's get started with today's stories. Yeah. And I got to say, this week and this month has just been filled with ticket stories, Mark. And I want to start off with some place that's near and dear to both of our hearts, which is the Portland, Oregon area. That's where the whole concept of Perf Bites came together and where we will be having our barbecue in August.
James, I was going to say we were going to give a shout out to our friends and colleagues in London and Manchester.
Oh, that is right. Mark, please go ahead.
Well, just, you know, I feel really bad about what's happening, and it's, you know, twice in like a week here we've got some crazy stuff. Plus back in Brighton there was another incident with a crazy guy running around in the same sort of modus. So to all of our friends in Manchester from the multiple folks, Richard Bishop, who's there, for Perf Bites listeners that are there, Ash Winter and Gwen are there, plus all the everyone in the greater UK area, our thoughts and prayers go out to you guys.
You've got Sherry down in Brighton, if you said something is going on down there as well.
I hope not. I mean, I hope none of this is happening. But you know, many of the folks in the Ministry of Testing and the other gatherings there in the London and greater areas. So thoughts and prayers out to you guys. I hope you stay safe, and condolences to anyone that lost a friend or a family.
Absolutely.
All right. Back. I just wanted to get that in there.
Yeah. Totally understood. Yeah. So.
Sorry. Go ahead.
So let's get back to some damned events.
Portland. Which now have we given more condolences out because of the stuff that went down in Portland. The guy that was obviously a crazy person and killed someone.
That's true. Train event there. You know,
It has nothing to do with websites, but we're just gonna be a depressing news of the damned, news of the depressed today. Bad stories about crazy people killing other people. And
I'm just gonna sit here and do big sighs.
I know. I'm sorry. Yeah. You can't really make fun of that. I mean, these are are our hearts and thoughts and prayers and all this stuff you're supposed to say. This is really crappy that it happens, but it happens. And it's been happening, you know.
With unfortunately increasing frequency, it seems. We can hope that trend changes. You know, knock on wood.
Well, at least you have wood. I think I have this is made of wood.
Yeah.
There
you go. So.
Okay, so back to Portland.
So, you know, this is bad news. Not as bad news as what you just noted, Mark, but Feast Portland. So this is a gathering of a bunch of chefs coming together, you know, cooking up stuff and, you know, people eating stuff and drinking stuff to go with their food, eating stuff. And it's a popular event, as you might imagine. In fact, I think even a chef from North Carolina has gone out there before for Feast Portland. You know, one of those PBS style chefs that, you know, I seem to recall a show on that. But, on Facebook, just in the last day, Feast Portland has had to apologize for technical difficulties that they were experiencing because there was so much enthusiasm for tickets for Feast Portland that their servers were overwhelmed.
Yeah. Their servers were overwhelmed. What's interesting is that they've seen these people can put together a recipe to make scrumptious amounts, large amounts of scrumptious food. But the recipe for the systems to support the website and sell tickets, not so much cooking very good there.
Yeah, it's just all, you know, it's kind of ad hoc, thrown together. Maybe you know, someone's teenage son or daughter, you know, was building the website.
Two parts web server, one part app server, one part database, and then I didn't have any CDN, so I just I used some limes, and just squeezed the juice. Limes are not a replacement for a CDN, and no matter how scrumptious the citrus flavor comes out of the mix for your website, if you don't make it with a CDN, it's just not going to taste the same.
Absolutely. So the website is Feast Portland, if anyone is listening and wants to run GT Metrics against Feast Portland, just to, you know, kind of see what's going on with the website. But I've had an opportunity to take a look at the website, and it suffers from a bunch of common patterns. So I'm going to switch gears. Instead of using GT Metrics, I'm going to use the built-in developer tools on Chrome. And Chrome's developer tools, particularly the audit section, is broken down into things that are external, that is network-type events and server-type events, and internal, which is things that impact, you know, the quote-unquote, that browser rendering once stuff gets pulled down and displayed. And there are all sorts of common sins that are occurring on Feast Portland. That is, they are not using browser compression. They're not leveraging browser caching effectively. They're not parallelizing downloads. And in fact, it doesn't even look like they have a CDN involved. So really just common items. They have a whole bunch of JavaScript they can put together. They have a whole bunch of CSS they can put together. And they're just, you know, they produce good food. Websites, not so much.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't think there's any way to, you can't add seasoning to get around this. But here, again, Portland's, Interesting. Portland has been actually on News of the Damned quite a bit, just the municipalities. There were the water reservoirs. There were. I'm trying to remember some of the other financial stories that were there. So Portland generally, it could be, you know, the Portland area has increased population recently. Like they've had a bit of an explosion, I think. There's people from California moving there, and they're, So maybe Portland is growing a little quickly, and they can't quite keep up infrastructure-wise. Or does this just sound like human error? This is probably just human error.
I think this is just human error. They put a very busy website together. They have tickets going on sale at a particular point. And once you combine those two things, generally you're going to have some issues. Looking at their website in a little bit greater depth, there's a lot of common stuff that they're serving off of their website that they really shouldn't do. Such as jQuery, jQuery stuff should be serviced from, you know, the code.google.com or googleapis.com or jQuery.org. Why serve it from your own website? If you know, that just makes no sense. Also looking at, just the front page, there's some notes in here for a, callback for get ticket status. Cached, get ticket status cached, which means they are doing what, Mark?
Waiting room. No.
Waiting room, they're probably implementing a default cart if they're getting a ticket status right on the front page.
I missed that. It's Sunday. My brain is not really, you know.
Yeah. And you know, we've had some comments on Twitter recently say, hey, can you talk about something other than just the default cart as an example of this too early pattern? And in general, if you're in a meeting for architecture or development and they say, we're going to pre-cache some amount of X as a part of this system design, if at least 51% of the people arriving don't make use of X, then essentially you are in this same pattern as a too early shopping cart allocation. Yeah. You should allocate it only as they need it at that point.
And what's interesting, James, you remember, you know, if you're coding something in C or C++, back in the day, everything had to be in the assembly because it's compiled in a single binary and it's executed as a single binary. And even though there were parts of the application, the program, that maybe you would never access, you had to have the libraries in there. This is, I'm thinking before there were any dynamic loading of libraries, right?
Okay. I mean, yeah. I mean, so this is way back. Way back.
Right?
Yeah.
So there's a generation of architects and programmers who knew, in the process of using this application, let's say there's one section of a game that only, you know, you're playing a game or you're doing something. Only once in a while, like say if you never print something, you don't need the print routine.
Yes.
But you have to load it in the program. And as this is years and years ago, you had to figure out how to have all of that loaded at the time you needed it. And that mentality changed as soon as we started having dynamically loaded libraries, which would be either in Unix or in Windows. And C++, you see this. And then you also had libraries that were supported in the operating system where, you know, the program didn't need to do this. They could just hand that information
that
over
common feature functionality, copy and paste, print preview, all of that type of stuff. Yeah,
exactly. And then, of course, eventually a network stack. It used to be back in the day if you wanted your application to talk to the internet, you had to actually load the network stack, TCP, IP, whatever, the token ring stuff. You had to load it with the application because the operating system didn't quite know about the internet or the network. So fast forward to where we are now, as a pattern, the X that you just talked about, James, sometimes you'll see people who put a common header, a header across all of the web applications.
And it's a common style sheet.
A common style sheet where it's like, you know what, there are parts of this style sheet that 90% of the pages don't even need.
Yep.
And in an e-commerce sense, the way you say, James, is like, you know, even though we know 70%, 75% of our customers are just browsing, I'm going to load a cart object. I'm going to load, let's in a different semantic. Let's say I have people that are looking for chatting, but they might turn on the video capability and they might get into an audio video chat. So in the application process, as they're surfing through different rooms to join or whatever, I'm going to load all those objects, even though the end user doesn't really need it. And I think Adobe used to do this. You can also do checks. Oh, do you have the latest libraries? You know, blah, you have to load this up. So I think one way that you're answering this is really good is, like, if you're preloading something in the process, in the sequence of steps, and you really don't need a large component or object in the application in the page until step seven, and maybe there's only a slim chance that they ever get to step seven.
Yeah. Maybe, you know, there only 25% of people get to step seven. Well, don't preallocate it for 100%.
Yeah. No,
wait till step seven.
And step one, two, three, don't even use that object.
Exactly.
So you don't need it. Now, the extenuating, the second level learning here, James, well, you and I have studied this, is depending on what that cart object is or what that, whatever that component is, could be a print routine. Like I say, it could be a video chat component, could be streaming videos or something like that.
Yep.
The other thing is, some of those objects are very quiescent, meaning they don't do anything. You can sort of load them and they're benign. And a lot of developers and a lot of programmers think, okay, it's fairly lightweight and I can load it up there. The mistake comes maybe a year later in the architecture where somebody says, well, now we're going to put a server-side component and we're going to load that cart from a database. We're going to make that little component that's loaded everywhere have more chattiness, have more calls in the back end. That's where this default object.
And Mark, that's a really good point, because you're taking a dividing line and saying, okay, pre-allocation on the front end, yeah, it can be a little bit dirty. You use a little bit more RAM. You're making some assumption about the amount of resources on the client's box. Yeah. But the really expensive piece is when you involve that slowest or highest cost finite resource network, and you're allocating something that has a complement on the server, or particularly on the origin server, so it has to bust through the CDN if you have one in place. Yeah. That's really where it becomes horribly expensive, and it impacts scalability on a horrible basis. So if you get this burst of load for, in this case, Feast Portland, you simply run out of resources because all of these items are being pre-allocated and managed on the server, and then things come to a screeching halt.
Yep. So that's we could snip that thing out and make it a public service announcement.
That works for me.
All right, we'll do that.
So Feast Portland is not the only organization having ticket problems this week. It seems like we have lots of ticket problems. Our next story comes from Mexico, which is the Ultra Music Festival, and it's going to take place in October of this year in Mexico City, at Foro Pegaso in Mexico City, making it the first Ultra event in the country. But same problem as Feast Portland. Essentially, you had tickets to go on sale at a particular time, and all of the interest for people coming to the site, and then boom, it just went over from the amount of load.
Yeah.
And we could look at Ultra Music Festival webpage to take a look, but odds are they have the exact same problem as Feast Portland, and probably the same issue as what is impacting our next shows, our next ticket shows coming up as well, which is Bruno Mars in Melbourne with a ticket tech crash.
I think because I follow the music stuff, I thought there was something crazy going on with Bruno Mars.
Yeah.
Yeah, but apparently he's good, crazy website things.
And ticket tech also crashed for Ed Sheeran. Now, this is not the first time Mr. Sheeran has been on our show this year.
That's right. He had some guitar setup thing. He like.
Yeah, it was like some pedal for repeating. It was his favorite pedal.
Looping pedal.
Yes.
Yeah. Not to be confused with that really, really bad Bruce Willis movie.
Looper.
Remember Looper?
I do. Some things you just can't turn away from. They're so bad.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, it looks good as a movie. The special effects were okay. Nothing spectacular, but just not a good storyline holding together there.
Yeah. So, I know it's like a show of ticket problems here.
Well, yeah. No, did you bring up ultramusicfestival.com in GT Metrics?
I did not. Do you want to do that just to take a look at it?
Page Speed gave him an F. You have to really try hard to get an F. seriously. I mean, we're skeptical sometimes as to whether you can really know if the CDN. Some of the rules here, the way they test them. I mean, these are standard page speed and YSLO, the way that packets are analyzed in the HAR file.
Yep.
But yeah, got an F in page speed. Oh my gosh!
Wow.
The page just the home page. Don't forget the whole conversation about like ordering carts or dynamic interaction, whatever. 5.3 megabytes. Not really. I didn't load. I don't know if there's a mobile version of this. 88 requests. Took 4.4 seconds to load the whole page. I'm guessing that was probably 1 5-megabyte image. So optimized images that did not put the JavaScript at the bottom of the page. They're not using scaled images, which means they're loading full-size images and only using little itty-bitty versions. So somebody just doesn't know how to design a web page.
Yep.
No browser caching, no compression.
Not unlike Feast Portland. In that sense,
like I said, in the past, we had picked on, it's not GT Metrics, but it's YSLO, about whether we really thought that they were using a CDN or not. And I think actually GT Metrics gave a C. I've never seen a C, 70% on CDN. So what's interesting here, when I look at the rules,
it's probably a composite site. So it's maybe they're loading jQuery from code.google.com or things of that nature, which have a CDN in front of them.
Yeah.
But the core site may not have a CDN.
Yeah. Just to be really clear, and this I like this because the one thing that GT Metrics does, and they should just sponsor the show, they're like giving it away for free. they actually will explain each of the rules and how they determine. So if you click and expand the CDN rule under YSLO, there are three static components that are not on a CDN, and they tell you what those three components are. So there's some stuff from like a query in Yahoo, a couple of Facebook components that obviously Ultra Music Festival is not responsible for caching them, but you could pull them down, cache them, and there looks like it's some kind of other ultra. So some really bad Facebook components and things in there that aren't really good. Now, if you think about Facebook, they are their own CDN.
Yeah.
I don't think they use any other CDN. So, that's really interesting. So, make fewer HTTP requests, no expires headers, no compression, DNS lookups. So they're not doing any, they haven't really, this is looks like a fragmented site. The waterfall's kind of, so very sorry, hug ops to the guys there trying to keep Ultra Music Festival going. Wow, yeah, and some really big images.
Yeah, and just as a cautionary note to anyone who's purchasing these types of websites, paying for these services, that if you pay someone to design a site, just go to GT Metrics when they're done before you cut the check. And if it doesn't show up at least a B, don't cut them a check until they fix it.
Yeah. That's the beauty of some of these rules. And actually the beauty of Steve Souter's work.
Yeah.
It's just like you have a nice unit of measurement of success or failure. Hey, here's a rule you got to see. We're going to hold payment for the final project.
And by the way, that also applies to organizations that are moving to software as a service, where they're trying to get everything out of the data center. They want everyone else to manage the stuff in-house. Yeah. If you're evaluating a couple of candidates for your services, bring up their websites, put them into YSLO. If you have to have a sign-on, there's YSLO and PageSpeed have little widgets that can put inside your browser, so you can download them and you can go behind the sign-in page and take a look. And if you're still getting really poor scores, Odds are you're going to have performance issues down the road. And perhaps you should ask those organizations to fix it before you buy their service.
Yeah, totally. All right, and the next one is Bruno Mars.
Yes.
It's a similar kind of issue.
Exactly. Bruno Mars, Ticket Tech, they're blaming Ticket Tech. And actually, this may not be so much of Ticket Tech's problem in and of itself, as because Ticket Tech also impacted Ed Sheeran in the same way, where tickets were sold out kind of en masse in a very short period of time, and then they're showing up on other sites for, you know, scalper prices and things of that nature. And Mark, we're very familiar with this problem. This is really a bots problem.
It is beyond a bots problem. It's like, how long have people been scalping tickets? You remember that the movie?
Well, I just want to say I've got these tickets at face value, and I've got this baseball hat that costs $3,000, but I won't decouple them.
Yeah, exactly. People, I was saying the movie Fast Time at Ridgemont High has the guy who's like always scalping tickets to Cheap Trick.
Is that Spicoli?
No, it's not Spicoli. Spicoli was the high on who, you know.
Yeah.
Hang it. It was the other guy. I don't know the actor's name, but he's scalping tickets. People are scalping tickets in the real world, and we will somehow, as a society, everyone can get on the internet. Discipline, every means of working. This is using bots. You buy, you know, you block the website, or you buy up all the tickets with incredible load, and then you just digitally go to another site, which, as you mentioned here on the Ed Sheeran stuff, via GoGo.
Yeah, these were also showing up on eBay and other sites. Mm-hmm. But I think the core lesson here really is that all of the major ticket providers, they can look in their logs and they can see what these patterns are from the bots. They should be able to build rules in their web application firewall to ensure that these bots do not get in at all.
Yeah.
As soon as you exhibit bot behavior, even if you are a human being, that's it. They should throw up a CAPTCHA immediately. Yeah. And if you fail the CAPTCHA, they should just block your session. And they should, a lot of these bots run from, let's face it, they run from Cloud Azure, they run from IBM's cloud, they run from Rackspace, they run from Amazon, wherever they can buy cheap computers for a short window of time. And these ticket providers should just block those data centers outright. Yeah. Sure, they may impact one real user who's sitting in the office, you know, monitoring the power consumption at the data center, but that's about it versus impacting thousands upon thousands of real users.
There's some great quotes that you found in the story on the Bruno Mars stuff. Hundreds of disappointed fans were venting their anger and frustration. One guy said, "Why the hell have major capital cities on sale an hour apart from one another, with the current waiting queue being 1 hour and 40 minutes? That's just pathetic." And another quote you have.
Yeah, this is from Sydney and Melbourne putting the shows on sale the same day.
Yes. Thanks, Ticket Tech, .. for absolutely nothing. Very sorry. So Ticket Tech, you know, hey, hug ops to the Ticket Tech guys. Maybe they lost some employees who were superstars, and you never know what they're trying to survive through. So hug ops to those guys. And if you want help, Ticket Tech, hey, give us a call.
We
know great people in Australia. You'll probably work with some of them. You know, Stuart Moncrief's down there, Mikhail's down there, and obviously Tim Koopmans.
Yep. I think it is important that all of these ticket agencies. Now, let's look at it from a ticket agency perspective. If they sell out in 5 minutes or they sell out in 5 hours, for them, revenue is revenue. Are they really that concerned about whether the bots come in and buy them in bulk or they're real customers? I tend to think that they're of two minds on that. It's like, well, we sold out, right? You know, it's the same revenue to them either way. and they have to do more work if they want the bots to be blocked. And the natural tendency of human beings is to, well, if I don't have to do that extra work, I won't. But I really think that for the best customer service, they really need to be working with a CDN provider, perhaps that has like tens of thousands of bot signatures that can automatically take care of this for them.
I wonder. So two things struck me. One, do we need a bot signature as a service so you can actually get a bot list?
Actually, Encapsula has that. They have a whole bunch of bot signatures for their web application firewall. So they've kind of been putting themselves forward as like a security first CDN. Yeah. And on the email side of the house, there's actually a pretty robust infrastructure for blacklist sites that are used as far as spam detection. So what email relays are primarily spam based, what IP addresses are primarily spam based, and that increases your score for your spam engine that's taking a look at all the email coming through.
I was going to let you make a really cool suggestion there, and like you could take the result of the capture, and one, you could block them. But yep. We know from a bot pattern that if you want them to believe that they're succeeding.
Yeah, we want to get the pattern that they're engaged in, and we want to, as soon as they start engaging in the pattern, give them a 5 of 3 for a random period of time.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
What if you created a totally fake version of the website so the bot thinks it's buying tickets?
Oh, that would be perfect.
And so the bot thinks, oh, I went all the way through, bought a block of 40 tickets, and you know, make it in, you put them on their own pool of servers, and they're going in the mock site.
Encapsula will do that. They'll redirect. Seriously? If they find a bot signature, that you can embargo them and send them to a different site, which I think is kind of cool. So yeah. You could send them to a fake site with unlimited tickets and just have them keep buying blocks of tickets
until but we've got to make it somehow they'll figure out that they're not actually purchasing a ticket. You could put it in the transaction, but you want that traffic to be segmented from real users. Well, that could be really interesting. All right, cool.
Yeah, put the bot target up in there's a good use for Amazon and Cloud Azure and things like that. Put the bot target up in Amazon. If you got your bot in Amazon and you got your bot target in Amazon, that's a time where you would want to have a access by signature file. If you've got a 10 gigabit backbone on both your client and your server, and one's designed to run as fast as possible, you want to make sure it's not a bot.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
All right. But Ed Sheeran also, you know, sold out another ticket thing and another thing. So
exactly. And Ed Sheeran, it impacted both Ticket Tech and Ticketmaster. So I guess tickets for Ed shows were going through two avenues. And both of the sites were impacted, and both went down, oddly enough. So you have this issue. And I really think that, Ticketmaster, Ticket Tech, other agencies, this bots issue, I'm not sure that they're handling it very well. We had kind of a kick late last year when a whole bunch of congressmen wanted to go see Hamilton and they couldn't get tickets because of bots were blocking them. So what do? They hold hearings about bots and potentially pass legislation that is going to make bots illegal. So what are the bots going to do? They're just going to move to data centers outside the United States. How about that? How about them apples for you?
It's not old people don't understand the internet.
That is a true statement.
All right, so now back to the depressing stories, the Ariana Grande.
Back to Manchester. So there is a follow-up concert, One Love Manchester benefit concert.
Yep.
Tickets sell out in 6 minutes. However, you know, the site had a problem staying up.
Yeah.
And I think, once again, this is that classical bot issue. Some also reported Ticketmaster website crashed when they attempted to get their tickets.
Yep.
I hate to say it, but you know, ticket scalpers really don't care what the cause is, as long as they can make some bucks on the ticket themselves. Yeah. So you have this issue of you know, morally questionable behavior in the case of a benefit concert, but you know, scalpers don't care. They really don't.
So that's just wrong. And like anytime we can do an obfuscation on bots, we know bots have mastered the bot signature. They figured out how to work to any Ticketmaster. Now, obviously, we're seeing Ticket Tech.
Yep.
These are like, they're like, you know, death by a thousand mosquitoes.
Yes.
And then real people who want to go to the benefit show and do the support of whatever the cause is are can't get in. That's really crappy. But like you said, good news from a Ticketmaster standpoint, they're actually sharing some information, you know, and they're being forthcoming about, hey, you know, we have issues with the site, but we want to do right by the.
Yeah, and in fact, Ticketmaster noted that there were something like 140,000 fans hitting their website that morning with.
And for almost half a million searches?
Yep. For that One Love Manchester. Now, there's going to be a lot of artists there.
Big names.
Ariana Grande is coming back. Katy Perry, Justin Bieber, Coldplay, Miley Cyrus. She will be wearing clothes. She's in her clothing period now. Yeah.
One Direction.
Pharrell Williams, Usher, Black Eyed Peas. Awesome. Fergie. Yeah. Sorry.
Tons of top names.
Yeah.
And the cause, of course, amplifies this because it's. They're doing it to support the victims.
And we hope that security is super tight for that event because I hate to say it, just like the World Trade Center event many, many years ago. So we had something there in the early 1990s that was not successful. And so 10 years later, we had a bigger event. I'd hate to think that this second event is going to act as a magnet for follow-on issues. And given its location right above the rail station there in Manchester, we just cross our fingers and hope that the British security forces have that place locked down so there's no opportunity.
That would be nice.
Yes. Yes.
Keep it safe, folks. Whatever you got to do.
Yes. So that was a lot of ticket stuff.
It's tons of ticket stuff.
Tons of ticket stuff. We expect more, by the way, because we're kind of in the summer concert series time of year. So we expect as shows coming up, we're going to have more ticket issues. Mm-hmm. And so this probably won't be the last time we see Ticket Tech and Ticketmaster in our discussions. Yeah. So next up, Mark, we're moving to kind of the government monopoly education theme and how all those things get themed together is there's only one site for that data. Either it's a government site, it's an education site, or it's other monopoly provider where it's not distributed. And I want to go right up front and say that the Powerball website has been having issues as U.S.-based Powerball has gone over $300 million.
Yeah.
Just slowed to a crawl. Fortunately, Google, if you go and just type in Powerball in Google, they have the current results, so you don't actually have to go to the Powerball site.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Last time Powerball was on, we suggested that as well. For election results, Google usually has election results.
Yes.
Cached, you know, distributed and cached all over the world.
And actually that helped take the load across the core state websites and prevented them from going down because Google was providing such a great source of data. And because admittedly, in 2016 election, I was waiting for state and local websites to go down just as they had done in previous election cycles. And they really didn't. And why? Google was helping out. It was taking the load.
Yeah. There you go. And I think Powerball as an interesting thing. You mean it is sort of they're still the one place you can. They think of themselves as the one. We don't know. I don't know anyone that's worked on the Powerball system. We should find someone that worked on that. But it was another one like down in Australia where people were like the exchange for these things, the lotteries were like from Australia and the cash stuff down there. And
yeah, they were able to buy foreign lottery tickets or something like that. And that exchange crashed.
Yeah. So it's a sensational thing. And when it gets over, you know, it'd be interesting to track when, like, correlate the performance or usage on the site with the current lottery number amount.
Oh, that would be so very cool. That would be like a perfect Akamai / Sosta Impulse or Blue Triangle type item to check the speed of the website as the dollar amount of the take goes up.
Because it's got to be some kind of exponential. The minute you go over a certain number, you're in the knee of the curve, and all of a sudden everyone's like, it's how much? I'm going to go buy a ticket. I'm going to go start checking every, you know, the number of people buying tickets, the number of people checking the results.
Exactly.
Goes through the roof. And of course, if, you know, the minute the IT department's sitting there going, okay, if nobody won, we got to be, it's going to go, now we're at 360 million. It's going to be like, it's not just another 10% users or 1% users. It's 12% users. It's 20% users.
Yep.
And it's going to be, that could be a really interesting predictive curve.
That would be, in terms of number of users, in terms of response time.
And a regression analysis, because you'd look at past years
as
what was the usage on the site at what amount.
Mark, are they keeping the data for those events? And I've got to say, there are an awful lot of organizations that don't keep the data. A good example is the site that shall not be named is healthcare.gov.
Yeah, yeah.
They simply throw away the log data. It is simply not available.
Yeah.
And this to me just seems unreasonable in terms of behavior, because that is a rich source of data for predictive analysis for how your load has changed over time versus, you know, what you should test for next year.
Okay.
I just don't get it.
That's fine. And sometimes they architect, we know people in performance issues, if they didn't architect a scalable solution that intends to save the data for future regression, or even if you did a aggregate saving over time, the first time there's a performance issue and someone says, oh, it's the database, they start purging data and like, I don't know, we just threw it away and then we have to keep the site up and this kind of stuff. So you don't architect for the long-term archival of at least the aggregated trends. I mean, that's then a lot of times that data is all you have is the fact data sitting right there in the database that's making things slow, and emergency response reaction means sometimes they throw that data away. Because you don't know what you're doing.
That is a true statement. That very last thing you said.
There you go. We got a lot of good quotes from this show.
Yeah. There you go. So next up from listener Steve Dwyer from Facebook.
Hi, Steve. Thank you, Steve.
This is the Global Online Enrollment System, the official U.S. government website to apply for global entry. I guess it's gone through its next generation form where people can apply for the global entry card, so it kind of speeds you through customs and things of that nature, and timeouts and failures.
Yeah. So it looks like instability, well, I think was your point before, some kind of instability. I mean, it's under load, so it might be getting, but it's...
I don't know what would have inspired an increase in load to this site. It's not like it's the Canadian immigration site or something.
Yeah, exactly. Immigration site anywhere. The unable to log in for days.
Yeah.
So this looks like maybe a functional database issue.
This could just be as we talk about DevOps. Maybe this is DevOops.
DevOops for sure. But it seems like account locking could. I guess it could be identity management. Maybe there's some back end failure from your actual login.
And you know, all it takes is holding on to the session too long for your sign-in credentials, and you can run out of resources against that server that does authentication.
Can't, and that's a logical issue. It's not usually not a physical limitation, a resource limitation. So you just need to get the schema to work properly. That's weird. Huh. Yeah, I'm not so sure about this one. I'm not. That might not. That
I'm just thinking it was a. It was just a bad build. You know. Just,
I think it might be. Yeah. This and again, how would you test for this kind of stuff? A lot of times in lower environments, dev QA, maybe even your load test environment. Sometimes you don't have all the same security components, or even the identity management stuff. Yeah, external tokens and things like that from prod. So when people tell you, you know, we don't have the ability to use the same security as prod in your lower environment, then you can't test for this. You can't actually do a check that, hey, yeah, that same call is going to work under, you know, aggressive load. You could do even a stress test of that would be been useful, you know, before you get there in prod. Yeah, or sometimes people use, if they're going through, we don't see OAuth. I don't think we've ever had OAuth. It's so distributed and it's everywhere. If you use, you know, the other OAuth providers out there.
Yep.
This could be using, what's the other, not site something. I forget the old technology. Oracle Identity Management was the one we saw in healthcare.gov.
Well, my guess is this is probably an LDAP store inside of the government. For this type of authentication information and storage. And it wouldn't take too much, like I said, if you just soft configuration, hold on to that connection too long, set your timeout too long, and then boom, you just run out of resources.
Right.
Run out of connection handles. Or the back end says, well, you can't have any more because I have to service other people.
Yeah. And so systems. It appears to the end user as I can't get into my account. And they don't know why. They can't, you know, I did the reset password thing. Oh, there's an interesting compensatory reactive behavior. If it's like, I can't log in, well, how come it's not? And well, maybe are you using the right password? I don't know. Then you start going down the forgot password, give a new password, which creates a storm on the same server that might be.
this is the same problem that if you recall a while back, Target, where they had been targeted by a credit card skimmer, and the security site at Target went down, and so what happened, everybody called the security group and the PBX went down from the load. So you know, it's like a balloon animal. You squeeze it in one area and the nose gets bigger.
I don't know why I always think of Scott Barber with the balloon animal reference in, like, you know, fluid dynamics and the calculations for engineering. And for some reason, whenever we use the balloon animal analogy, I think of Scott.
That's because when you squeeze Scott's foot, his hair gets longer.
That's not right. That's not fair.
And we're just picking on Scott. And I admittedly had dinner with him about a week ago, so I'm sure he'll be laughing at that one.
Yes. But he must have been one of the first people to use that analogy, and it just stuck in my mind when I learned it from him. So, yeah. All right. Very sorry.
So next up, I almost wish we had a cover the Beatles Taxman on this one. So you have a new program in the UK that allows people to take a portion of their income and set it aside in accounts managed by the government. So this is a new solution where people can put money in that is managed by the government so they can pay their child care provider.
Hmm.
You know, kind of on a non-taxed basis. Now, there may be other reasons why the UK government wants to understand this, because then they can understand how much revenue a particular child care provider is receiving, so how much tax they can take out of it as well. So, you know, there may be multiple things coming into play here, but it doesn't help if the government manages all of these accounts and there's only one place to go and that site has performance problems.
Well, of course it has performance problems whenever you figure something out that is missing. This might be in demand. I wonder if, James, there's just maybe, and I can imagine that there's, in the spectrum of child care providers, there's some people who are, some organizations that are really well run and some of them that maybe are not so well run. You know, like in any businesses, you're going to have, you know, great records keeping and stuff. Then you'll have some maybe less sophisticated or maybe unscrupulous child care providers who have a really bad accounting department. And people are like, look, I paid, I can't get a receipt. And then, you know, the government's supposed to tax them and I'm supposed to show that. So basically the constituents in the UK said, look, this is a form of healthcare. we have, you know, National Health Service, and so we think the government should be accountable. So we're going to pay you, and then you can regulate those individual healthcare providers. And we're talking about kids. It could be that there's some poor behavior on the service provider side.
Well, what I'm looking at here,
I can't get my tax stuff calculated because, you know, they're out of business and they took, you know, the records are gone and all this kind of stuff, and that's kind of lame. There's also probably it could be homeschooling or unschooling and things like. A good person to talk about this with would be Rosie Sherry.
Yeah. Well, what I was thinking in this case, and the National Healthcare Service in the UK also had a large, massive software failure. Which up until healthcare.gov was the most expensive software failure on record.
Yeah.
As far as pushing out new services, government doesn't have a really good record of pushing out new services that are highly performant from the outset. Why? Because they kind of lack that competition basis where, you know, the fastest site or the most elegant site wins. Instead, it is, well, there's only one place for you to go. Even if we get it wrong, you can't go anyplace else.
Yeah.
And if you're frustrated as a user, you can go and vent to the politicians. And what does that mean? That means government employees are going to go ask the politicians to take more money to give to them to fix it. So there's not really a check and balance in play here in the market or the funding for them to get it right at the outset.
Yeah. And my guess is, with most of this, it's, you know, I'm putting together with what budget I have something to try to solve this problem and comply with some new law or regulation.
Yep.
And they do the best they can. They don't like in the private sector, there's a lot more people do. It's different, you know, I have to say government IT, as we've seen all these things pop up, it's highly controlled. In some cases, they're not using the latest, greatest techniques or the latest technology stacks there,
and sometimes they're using, let's put it bluntly, unscrupulous contractors who will not ask performance questions on round one to allow them to get a second bite of the government apple. Yeah. On round two, and said, oh well, you know, we were aware of these, now that we know what the load and volume is, you know, we can adjust this. And
that's not fair. That's completely screwed up.
Yep.
Whereas the private sector is like, we're on to that, and if you pull that kind of stuff, you're out. And we've also accelerated the development cycle in lots of smaller releases in the new DevOpsy continuous world, where if somebody's screwing around, we're going to know it within 2 weeks, not years worth of a project.
Well, I think there are some exceptions to that, particularly on the SAP deployment side of the house. If it's
long term deployment,
exactly, and some of those same government providers that don't ask the performance questions on round one, just don't ask them on round one for SAP as well. I can think of a number of examples where even some of these big four agencies have refused to participate in performance activities because it was not in the initial statement of work, and that then requires a variance. And sure. More money.
Yeah, it's just, what's sad about this is you've got actual individual people with kids. Whenever the kids are involved, I'm like, hey, go make your money somewhere else.
Yeah, and what's really sad is I didn't pull the comments in, but there were some comment blogs where people had, since they could not get to the site to make the payments for their child care provider or childminder, as it's sometimes known in the UK, is that they were paying it themselves. And since this money, I guess, automatically comes out of their accounts and goes into the government accounts, effectively, they were paying twice.
Yeah. And it's hard enough being a parent if you're trying to make ends meet. And then, you know, we know child, if you don't have child care, especially if you're a single parent, you have to get to your job. And, you know, this is really stacked up against people. So, hug ops to everyone involved there. And if you're a jerk who's just trying to make money off the kids, go somewhere else.
Well, you know, Fruit Loops.
That's right. Yeah.
Fruit Loops, man. They provided value to me as a child. You know, I better be careful how far we take that analogy there.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So,
hey, guess what? Repeat offender time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, this is a multiple repeat offender.
Multiple repeat
offender. So in India, this is the time of year where all of the exam results come out. So you're at the end of the academic year. You take a test. The academic results come out. And it seems like year after year after year, we see problems with these exam results being published because you have an enormous interest, a large number of people all going to one site to collect information on their score because that then means or dictates how they move forward academically. And we have two in this past week. One is the CBSE results. So this is the Central Board of Secondary Education Class X 2017 results failed and crashed. And
again.
And we also have the CET results, which is the, let's see if I can find what that acronym is. That's the Common Entrance Exam or Common Entrance Test for Maharashtra. Official portal, the MHT CET results 2017, both of these sites crashed.
Wow.
And this is that common usage pattern that also comes into play for tickets. We have a defined date and time where these elements are available. We have a pent up interest and we have people in many cases which have an enormous quantity of mobile phones, which extract an even higher load because of the dirtiness of the nature of the network connectivity back to the cell tower, that last mile problem. And you put all that together and you get up, down, crash, boom.
Yep, crash, crashy, crash, crash, crash. Now, the interesting thing you pulled out here, James, for these stories, both of them, is some interesting steps. Do you want to share kind of the steps that you pulled from the stories?
Both of these stories were from NDTV in India. And in addition to saying, hey, the site has gone up and come down and gone up and come down, both of these stories go to great lengths to provide you instructions on how to go and get the site and get your results.
And so it's like, if you're having difficulty, we're being helpful. But at the same time, they're telling masses of people, high quantity of people, do these exact steps.
That leads to a bunch of people doing these exact steps.
Concentrated load. Now, there may be no other steps involved. Right?
To their credit, some of these exams do have other options for getting the results. The CBSE exam could be viewed via short message or SMS on your cell phone, but they're going to charge you for that. Or
making money off a failing website.
You can use the IVR system, but they can charge you for that. So there you go. You've got alternate paths if you want to take advantage of them.
All right, so here's a scoop. Now, if they could fully disclose that every dollar or every rupee? They're going to make rupees, right?
Yeah.
All the money made through IVR or SMS would go to fix the website. that would be fair. You might say, I can afford a couple extra bucks, and if you guys are going to upgrade the SAN, that's great. Here you go.
What I find interesting is year after year we go through these, and we've been doing this for 4 years, and we still see the same problems. You would think there is a market here of sufficient size and complexity that someone would build a solution and go and sell it to them for, you know, exam results. Yeah. You know,
middle of stating that there are other places to check your results, and one of the things this list is here, you can view them on Bing.com.
Yeah.
Maybe Microsoft India is actually stepping up to try to help here. The same way we get election results through Google or you know, the Powerball results through Google or through the internet, maybe Bing is trying to jump in and help here. That's cool.
I know in some areas of the world, they used to just take the exam results and just post them on a big board outside of a school where people would come by and look for their name and cry heavily because their peer saw their score and it was very embarrassing and things of that nature. And so now it's come down to the point of you just have one location for you to go and you get your particular score. But at some point, if these sites cannot stay up, they might just
have to go
put
back.
A static roll on it.
Well, and it's also infrastructure for snail mail. There may be some kinds of fraud here as well. Around the world, you know, the digital nature of our identity becomes flexible. And so the hard thing here, I think, is somebody else takes your identity, gets your exam results, shows up and says, I'm this person, and, you know, here's my results. And you're like, wait a minute, you know, they may be some identity fraud thing that they're trying to prevent with this elaborate, not adequate system, but, you know, with these elaborate steps and that kind of stuff, right?
Could very well be.
I don't know.
But, I mean, there is a...
Every one of our listeners in India, and we have tons of them in India, you know, if you can know somebody, reach out to them and help them out, this is a good thing. And if Microsoft India is actually jumping in and doing something at Bing, that's cool. That's awesome. My buddy Millen works in at Microsoft, and he has connections there within Microsoft India.
So there's also another site that's been mentioned, DigiLocker. Your DigiLocker account contain your class results. So there are multiple avenues to get the data. Yep. And so if you're intent on going to the official website, maybe just go to the secondary sites first.
Yeah, I would start there.
Yeah. So that brings us to his orangeness.
His orangeness.
His 45. Orangeness. Yes, his orangeness. So who was
the 42nd president?
42? 42, that'd be George Bush, wouldn't it? George Herbert Walker Bush?
If we're on five, Obama's 40. Oh, because each presidency, counting-wise. Yeah. So Obama was 44 and 43. So Bush's second term was 42.
No. They just do it by who holds the office. So it would President Obama would have been 44, and then Bush would have been 43. Then Clinton was 42, and then George Bush Senior was 41.
So I was just saying, you know, 42.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, we just got to work back in sequence. That's all.
We're good with math.
Yeah. So the last two stories involve President Trump one way or the other. And story number one involves one of these coordinated mass efforts across multiple cities called the March for Truth. Mm-hmm. And the coordination of a lot of people to get out and march together and hold signs together and chant together and things of that nature. And the organization's website for coordination of this activity went down in response to the hundreds of thousands of searches 48 hours prior to this Saturday. So here is a really good example of why, as a, I don't know if this is a not-for-profit organization, if it's a charitable organization. If it's a charitable organization, it's probably shouldn't. There's some politics issues there that maybe it can't maintain its charitable status if it's involved with politics. But it could just be a, you know, a whole bunch of people coming in together and someone took ownership and built the website and, you know, they maintain the mailing list and everything else. Yeah. But even so, there is a responsibility to ensure that your site can scale to handle the load if you're going to be in charge of this coordinated activity.
Right.
And particularly if you're going to have dynamic searches, that is, I'm going to allow people to search by zip code or search by state or search by city for the event, and that's going to put a load on the site to pull back what is the closest local event, then you have a responsibility to test. Or here's an example, because you have a coordinated activity for a bunch of like-minded individuals, why not just pre-generate a static list and take that search function away if you know you're going to have high load. I know it's difficult to change the behavior of people, but you could refer them to Google for the search. You could just put the little Google search button on the site, because Google will pre-cache elements and deliver it to you that way. Or you could just have a static page that had all the names and locations of coordinators and phone numbers and email addresses and all that jazz.
Yeah, yeah. I was trying to say, I think we've had a couple other marches on the News of the Damned that maybe crashed a site, like one of the science march.
I think the women's march, there were some aspects there that crashed as well, or some things that were going on the same day, the Antifa people and news stories related to that. And yeah. So all of those activities, if they're going to be mass in nature and there's any sort of logistics infrastructure, right, you need to be aware that if you're going to have dynamic capability for searching, then you're going to have this load issue that you're going to have to deal with. Yeah. Otherwise, just convert it to a static page, a static list of names and coordinators by city and state, or heck, just give them a map and let them click on the state and then click on the region and then have it pull back a static piece of information to go with that.
Yeah. You know, James, the other interesting thing on this is, given that this is politically charged, and
yes,
it's, I have to say, it's from a societal standpoint, if you're running a business, you know, there's a lot of things that can affect your business as to whether you're going to be popular or unpopular. People make choices because darn those people that have choices. But you know, like, let's say you went to Google and said, hey, Google, could you do the same thing you do for election results, which is also politically charged, but neutral. They're just numbers quantitatively.
Yep.
You know, for these marches, you know, there's marches on the entire political spectrum and all sorts of different causes. Why isn't, you know, why
I mean, I mean, heck, even the Nazis marched in Skokie.
Sure. That's it's called the ACLU, and it's called called the Constitution. You're free to do that, free to assemble. And but the idea is that there may be people hesitant to get into the game of, you know, I'll follow all these different marches, and you can sort of spread them out on these different service providers. And it may be that it's the politically charged nature is maybe there isn't. Like, let's say if I just go to Google here.
Well, I think Google probably is indexing these sites, but if you can only get to some of this data behind a search filter, then it's going to be very difficult for them to search it. But if it happens to be, say, in a directory structure that can be traversed, you know, events, state/city/state/zip.
It's pre-existing, very consistent, and for all we know, negotiated.
Yeah.
Like this, Google, this is going to be huge. But I think maybe we also have underestimated some of these marches, like the Women's March, the March for Science. There was a tax march or something. You know, they've also had record turnout in municipalities that are like, well, we only thought 1,000 people showed up, and there's like 5,000 people here. So it's even happening physically. But I was just thinking, you know, there could be some negative apprehension about, well, we're not really going to be, you know, Google's not again in the game and pre-cache the information. I just did a search for a March for Truth, and they have top stories from the news perspective.
You know,
one of those pre-populated.
I think there's a great example of that, of people getting scared to get involved in the politics, particularly at the corporate level. You have Kellogg's, which came out and made a statement regarding you know, people on one end of the political spectrum, and then they have suffered financially because of that. You had Target, who came out and made a statement on a social issue involving transgender use of bathrooms and things of that nature. Yep. And their management has said recently, hey, that was a bad decision. We should have just stayed out of that issue altogether because it impacted us. And, you know, me as on the more libertarian side of the house, you know what? I don't care what you believe. Just don't make any statements on it. We can all agree to get along and ignore each other's idiosyncrasies that we disagree with. That's true tolerance right there. Right. Yeah. As soon as you, as a corporate environment, take a stand, no matter what that stand is, you're going to orphan some percentage of your base. And that base, if it's on one side of the spectrum or not, if they're technically aware, You may have a situation like we just had with the FCC petition site, like we had with the Brexit side of the house, where you have technology people who are aware and they decide they're going to take out their frustration by blowing up your website.
There you go.
In that case.
It's not fair. It doesn't matter. Don't blow up people's websites.
Yeah. You know, we don't often talk enough about performance testing tools and what they really are. They are the tactical nuclear weapons of the software industry. And if you receive a tactical nuclear weapon underneath your Hanukkah bush or your Christmas tree at the end of the year, we do not recommend that you go out and point it at other people's postal boxes or point it at their houses and pull the trigger, because that's just not being a good neighbor. You know, if you want to blow up your own house or your own postal box, that's just fine. Just don't point it at other people.
So very sorry to the March for Truth.
Yep.
You guys are obviously more popular. Again, the march, I'm sure there's got to be some service provider that these different marches talk to each other, and they have some communication where they schedule dates and when things are going to happen.
And you know what? This would be a great item for the cloud and the capability to expand and static contract.
Content, lots of static content. Just get it out there.
Yeah, and at least expand that capability for a very short window when it's needed, and then after the march is over, that load is going to compress to almost nothing for a period of time until there's another march coming up.
Yeah. And it could be also, James, just not to belabor the point, but we it's what we do on this show. The idea that maybe there's these organizations may or may not have nonprofit status. They're not organized that way.
Yep.
They're independent. They may even not be an LLC. It's all just people volunteering.
It's 5 and 15 people together on a conference call. Yeah.
And so there may not be a formal way to call up, like call up Howard from SOSTA, who now is connected to Akamai. It's like, hey, you've got all the answers you need. You could do it, you can do this stuff on your own and see it. But like if you are a nonprofit, there's certain things.
So Mark, does Perf Bytes need to produce a pamphlet? So you're going to run a protest. Here's what you need on your website.
I think it's a public service announcement. I think we have a new a public service announcement for Mark.
Yeah.
They need to talk to the Sarge.
Oh,
if you're marching.
The Sarge may be a little intense for some of these marchers.
That's right. No, they have conviction. These people are fired up. They're getting out there. They've got a serious cause. And Sarge will only make you better with some PT, for sure. Do we cover the safety pin one as well?
We have not. So, just to show that we are equal opportunists when it comes to poking on the political spectrum.
Oh, yeah.
We have the March for Truth, which is definitely an anti-Trump type of item. And then we have another item, which is on the opposite end of the spectrum, on the pro-Trump side of the house. And this was in response to a Donald Trump "Make America Great Again" Twitter post. I think this one was correctly spelled, in this case. But a respondent, I really want to get that license plate, Covfefe or whatever it is. However you say it, I've fat fingered enough posts over the years. It's like. It happens. Yeah, but it's still funny.
But it seems like he just went unconscious at the end of it. It just fell apart. Like his brain was attacked. It was like he had a virus of some kind.
It was late. We had to give him. Yeah. So on the pro Trump side of the house, we have a respondent to one of Donald Trump's posts who claims to be a business owner and says, "I own a small accessories company. We sell everything, blankets, pacifiers, business is booming. We sold out of diapers 10 minutes after your announcement of the Paris Accord." I don't know what diapers and Paris Accord has anything to do with. But when you said I was elected to represent the citizens of Pittsburgh, not Paris, our website crashed due to high safety pin demand. And I'm wondering if you're using safety pins to hold your website together, there is something wrong here. Mark, I think you mentioned in the pre-show prep that maybe staplers would be in order, or my thought, rubber bands and bubble gum.
Duct tape.
Duct tape fixes all.
Yeah. There's a third-party component you can bring. I think it's ducttape.jar. You just put it right
in. Or ducttape.js, you know.
JS, yeah. It's a JavaScript assembly called ducttape. You can put it right and load it in on every page. But honestly, what the safety pin demand... This guy's selling accessories. I know the safety pin was a anti-Trump, it's safe to talk to me. Right after the election, remember there were people like wearing safety pins?
Yep.
As a sign, which was, you know, I'm tired. That's a little bit pretentious for me. I think you can just talk to people and
yep.
they'll know you can be honest and not offensive but a silent way to, that's fine. People wear a flag pin that got screwed up too. But these people they're selling stuff, blankies, pacifiers. I mean, there's the cynical side, which is potentially pro Trump and making fun of
yeah.
the Paris Accord or whatever. But yeah. the safety pin is, were they buying the safety pins? I don't, that's, what's the safety? I don't get
that. See, I don't know if it's the anti-Trump people were buying the safety pins from this site, from the accessory site to say, well, we stand against Trump on climate change, so we're going to wear a safety pin. You know, I haven't ordered one yet, so I'm going to order one now, type of thing. I didn't get that piece of it, but clearly it's like, hey, this organization was saying, I don't care what you're saying, keep saying it, it's good for my business. But on the other hand, at the time of demand, yeah, let's face it, if you're going to buy a safety pin for a political statement, there's like a really narrow window in which you're going to say, you know what, I'm going to buy that safety pin. And you're going to go to the site, and you're going to put it in the cart, and you're going to go check out, and it's going to blow up, and you're going to be like, I'm going to just go find a safety pin upstairs.
Well, okay. But I can't even find out what the guy's site is. Liberal accessory. Oh, yeah. Okay, fine.
So, yeah.
All right.
It's just, yeah, he didn't put the name of his site. He just said, well, we, you know, our site went down to high safety pin demand. I'm like,
I don't know.
What? You know, high safety pin demand. Have you considered integrating with maybe Amazon if safety pins are that big of a thing?
Yeah. You go sell something through the Amazon Marketplace.
Yeah.
Safety. And really, this has to be, there's got to be some branded safety pin. It's probably created humorous, like you say, diapers and different things.
Yeah.
Anti-Trump. Crash site. All right, I'm going to see business booming. Okay, see why Trump protesters are wearing safety pins. It's fine. It's weird. I'm just trying to find out where the guys. I want to see if.
Yeah, I was looking for the site as well, and I could not find the site to do that.
Well, all right.
Yeah.
It's very, very sorry, but if you know that. I got to say, this is not a big deal because there's plenty of places you can go to buy safety pins.
And that's a good point to bring up, Mark. You know, if this site goes down, you want your safety pin and his site or this person's site goes down. You know, there's not a whole lot of differentiation in safety pins. You could just go to another site and the next time you need a safety pin.
Walgreens?
Yeah.
CVS?
Yeah, the next time you need a safety pin, you'll go to that.
It's Michael's Crafts?
Yeah, you'll go to that other site before coming back.
There you go. Yeah.
So there's a high opportunity cost if you can't satisfy the safety pin demand at the time of the demand.
Yeah. How do you? That's just bizarre. But I'm really curious if they had like some logo thing on it. If it's not just a regular safety pin, that makes no sense.
Yeah. Maybe it's orange.
Maybe it has a little hair woof. At the top of it.
little blonde hair tuft and it's orange. You know, at least then it would be highly differentiated and you know, you'd want people to come back for that one.
So this is good. We get some feedback. If you're listening to the show this far, we've been going almost an hour and a half. You know, and part of it is travel and stuff. But yeah, this is one of the reasons we kind of wanted to get into the 2-week cycle. Is that we'd have at least 3 stories, but because, you know, some people, they're not going to make it all the way to this humorous fun at the end of the show, James.
Yeah, I know.
So if you guys want James to do you know, smaller shows on a more regular basis. We'll figure that out.
If you need your daily damned, let me know.
Yeah, we could do it. We could do it real time as well. You know,
like yes. Right hey, now, this site is going down. Everybody, go to the site and check it.
Yeah, see, that's I can't do that. You can insult to injury. That's exactly. But this is fun. We covered a lot of stuff. And again, you know, shout out to folks in Manchester, folks in London, folks in
and if you go to Feast Portland, let us know how the food is.
Yeah, except but remember the big food truck? There's tons of food trucks in downtown Portland.
Yeah, that's true. Probably an offshoot for this. Well, Mark, it's that time.
Is it again?
It's that time again. Yeah, we have come to the end of yet another Perf Bites News of the Damned.
Yes.
I'd like to thank everyone involved with the show. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Apica System and Neotis. I'd also like to thank my mother for tuning in, because I know that she loves to tune in and listen to the show. And I'd also like to give a shout out to my great aunt Gloria, who just turned 92 but is recovering from a stroke. So I hope her recovery is fast, and look forward to seeing her in the future.
That would be very good. I will give my my special thanks today to the sexy Irish voice of Perf Bites, who's off supporting and volunteering at Arts in the Park, helping our neighbors take care of some things, and of course to Ardbeg Whiskey for giving me just a little bit of a headache this morning.
And of course you smell like peat.
Not so much. Yesterday was Ardbeg Day, and I had I put some tastings out there, but the Kelpie is the new release, and I got a committee release of the Kelpie. It's pretty low in peat, very smooth, lower alcohol content, so I just had a wee dram of that. So maybe it's allergies or something, but thank you, Ardbeg, for my little headache this morning.
Yes, thank you, Ardbeg. Today's show is powered by safety pins and duct tape. If one of these two items cannot hold what you need together, then, well, you know, you're out of luck.
Yeah, exactly. And to remind everyone that today's show and all of the Perf Bites production shows are protected by diapers. So if you're going to have some kind of an accident and you're not quite sure about what to do, whether you should take this content, put it somewhere, whatever, just keep in mind that we're wearing diapers.
Well, Mike, speak for yourself, Mark.
It just came out wrong. It
really yes, did. Yes, yes. For more information about Perf Bites, please visit the show's website, www.perfbites.com, or follow us on the Twitter, the Tumblr, and Facebook. You can always tune in and subscribe and listen to the Perf Bites podcast on iTunes, iHeartRadio, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, testingpodcast.com. Just open up your favorite listening app, search for Perf Bites, and click on the subscribe button. Please send us an email with your questions or thoughts at ask@perfbites.com, or you can leave us a message or voicemail at 77-LOAD-PERF. That's 775-623-7373.
Yeah, you know, it's also, I get it on Overcast. It's a player.
Yeah.
And I don't think, I haven't checked Google Play. I don't think we registered with Google Play, but they have podcasts now.
Oh, excellent.
And then the iTunes podcasts are now like affectionately known as Apple Podcasts.
Oh.
So maybe we need to update how we say that, because it's part of iTunes, but they have like a podcasting app.
Gotcha.
So yeah, we're in there. We're in there. We're everywhere. We'll be fine. The Perf Bites show and staff are supporters of the Practical Performance Analyst, the Performance Engineering Book of Knowledge, Test Fash, and the Ministry of Testing, the Computer Measurement Group, the Workshop on Performance and Reliability, and of course, the Software Test Professionals Community of Software Testers. Come join us at the next SDPCon, which will be down in Virginia by the airport, the Dulles Airport. That's in September. A couple other things, just a shout out. I've been talking with the guys at DevOps Days Philadelphia. And we'll be a community sponsor for DevOps Days, which is really great. I put in some submissions. Hopefully, I can get in there. But our good friend Andy Grabner will be giving a presentation.
Andy!
Be great. So, yeah, check out devopsdays.org. Actually, I think it's just do a search in Google for DevOps Days, and there'll be one near you. And the other thing was, I guess, Test Bash. We're going to be doing that in November. So look for Test Bash Philadelphia in November. That's kind of what we got going on. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thank you, everyone. Be sure to turn on your software architect to the show. And let them fear showing up on the next edition of The News of the Damned.
Excellent.